Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Coulson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolte.
And you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you're cleared to know the truth. Josh, I think this week the truth is, you know, sometimes I get a little down, excuse me, and I really just want Mac to hold me tight and close like that. It just seems so soothing.
It is. Well, because you can rest your head in those big, you know, those big pecs.
I know. It's like little. It's like the little center of my pillow right there.
Yeah. Except a firm pillow, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And one that you would not want to piss off.
No.
Definitely not.
Agreed.
So. But season finale this week, the first season finale of stuff that we talk about. Not the first season finale I've experienced this season. There have been a couple other shows that went off several weeks ago, actually. Supergirl for one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But just right now, what is thumbs up, thumbs down?
I would say two big thumbs up. Yeah, I have one thumbs up for each episode, right?
Correct.
So that'd be
there
two.
You go. That's good. Good.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it satisfied me more than I expected, actually. And I guess I wasn't expecting anything bad or anything, but it just
you were expecting an agent to die.
Well, in this case, I actually was expecting that. On other shows I've been watching, you know, I guess not so much really. And not as happy about it either. But this one, I'm not happy about it, but I thought it was a very satisfying ending, and I really liked the way it played out emotionally, and it gave us a groundwork for season four. So
holistically, as a two-part season finale, I thought this satisfied everything and more that a season finale should do. I thought it's the best season. I think I've said this the last 2 years, but this is the best season finale we've had on the show. It's taken it to another level, and that's what their season finales do. They take it up a notch and then give you a big kick and say, oh yeah, by the way, here's kind of what we're thinking about doing next. And, you know, it's mind blowing, but also it's a great bookend and closure for the first three seasons. The first three seasons, I feel like now we've kind of closed out, you know, like a trade paperback, right? This is like volume one of S.H.I.E.L.D. is encompassed by seasons 1, 2, and 3. And that's a nice little package that we have there. And if you never got anything else, this is what would be awesome. But we're getting season four, and we're going to start a new chapter.
Wow. Like last year, I'm not sure where the next chapter is going to go. And I like that. I like that I'm not sure. And they didn't end it in a cliffhanger again. It was more of standing on the edge of the cliff, you know, going, okay, there's some good stuff that can happen, but I don't have to wait all summer to find out.
I can see a lot from here, and I can speculate about what's out there, but it's not, oh my gosh, is like, how are they going to get out of this kind of thing, right? Which...
Agreed.
I enjoy because, again, should you not get picked up, you just chop off the last 2 minutes of the episode and you're done. But, you know, those last 2 minutes or three or five or whatever it is we got were pretty cool. So I want to get in talking about that, but why don't you give us a little rundown of the episodes? It appeared to be a 2-hour episode, but really they will have it on the DVD and Blu-ray as two individual episodes, and because they each have their own names and their own crew and stuff on.
Although this one flowed more like a two-hour movie.
This flowed really
than,
well.
Than maybe any other ones that they've done. But all right, let me tell you. I'm going to tell you the title writers and directors of both of them here, and then I'll run down the brief for the whole thing as,
as
a two-hour movie.
Yep.
So episode 21 from season 3, Absolution. And both these episodes aired May 17th, 2016. The first half was written by Chris Dengus and Drew Z. Greenberg. I always forget how to say that. Is it Dengus?
I think it's Dengus.
I like it. That sounds cool anyway. So I'm going to say that. It was directed by Billy Gearhart. Part two, or the second episode, was Ascension. It was written by Jed Whedon and directed by Kevin Tancharoen.
Oh, yes, it was.
Yes, yeah, for sure. You could. It's really becoming obvious, I guess, who directs some of these episodes, or at least certain directors kind of have their own signature style.
I am starting to notice Kevin's style. And for me, though, a Jed Whedon written or a Jed Whedon and Marissa Tancharoen written script – There's something else about it. It's very obvious to me.
Totally, absolutely. We'll have to maybe sometime break down some of the things that we really notice in particular in those. I don't think they stand out in a bad way.
No, it's not that they stand out. There's just common element. I mean, it's like going to see a Spielberg film. You know, Spielberg always has a certain touch to it. It's like listening to a John Williams score. There's just, you know, you notice these recurring themes, motifs, and stuff like that. So that's kind of what it is.
Right. So, all right, well, let me kind of run down the plot of these two exciting episodes here, okay?
Okay.
The fight for the future of the human race is on here. Hive is preparing to launch and detonate that nuclear bomb that's going to turn the whole human race into inhuman primitives and completely destroy the shampoo industry. I'm just saying, because, you know, those primitives, it's just stylish hair, in my opinion.
Yeah,
but still.
In your opinion. I got it right.
Yeah. but don't worry. Shield's on top of it. Well, under it, actually. May flies the Quinjet underwater to infiltrate Hive's lair and not only get the warhead, but actually capture Hive himself. Look at that. In the first few minutes of the first episode, I'm thinking, hey, well, wait a minute. They've got a lot to go here.
We've got like 90 minutes left.
Yeah. So my speculation was something brand new was going to happen. No, of course, he was going to get out, but that's okay. Now, even with this good news, Daisy's still feeling sorry for herself. She blames herself for everything that happened when she was under Hive's spell. And you know, nobody's moral pep talks are seeming to make a difference, even with a great big bear hug from her number one friend, Mac. But even though Hive's been contained, that, you know, doesn't mean everyone's in the clear. Of course, the bad guys always have a backup plan. And this time it's in a crate from Absolution, Montana, in the form of some wicked Terrigen smoke. I guess that's what it's called, Terrigen smoke. I didn't know what else to call that.
Or Terrigen mist. Usually.
Missed. Okay.
Yeah.
It didn't miss, though. It hit him. It turns some shield agents into primitives that free Hive. Luckily, did that scene remind you of 2001? Just look, all these cavemen beating on a monolith. So.
Oh. No, that's a good point. No. They really remind me of the – I was explaining what they look like to one of my friends, and I said they're kind of a mix between the people that happen that Pink Floyd sees in Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's like the kids or whatever. They're going to the meat grinder and stuff. And then – and also a combination of Eugene from the new series Preacher, who has a more colorful name in the comics that I won't go into here, but with a little puckered mouth and stuff like that.
Right, right. So, well, luckily, it seems that Daisy's had enough of being contained, and she decides to escape to join in the fight. But she kind of has a different little plan in mind as she begs Hive to take her back.
Oh, noes.
I know. So that moves us into the second half of our 2-hour long movie here. Now, have we lost Daisy to Hive again? Alas, Lash has given her one last gift by making her impervious to Hive's influence, which doesn't really sit well with her, but so she opens up a big can of Quake Butt on Hive. I worked a long time on that one. He's too tough for her, though, and he decides to bring her along on the Zephyr, on the ride up through the atmosphere to detonate the warhead. Meanwhile, the team's doing their best to get back control of the base from the primitives. In the process, Yo-Yo takes a bullet for Mac and fades fast as she loses blood. Is she going to be the one that dies?
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, they'll have to rely on the wily Dr. Radcliffe to help them out. Now, Lincoln goes head-to-head against James and manages to take round one, but Hellfire left him in a parting gift with an exploding ball of flame to his side and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. home game. Is he going to be the one that dies?
I don't know.
We'll see. As Hive flies higher, Daisy realizes that May and Fitz have managed to come aboard as well, and May's doing her best to take down the bad guys. But Gera gets in a cheap shot, man, and he overpowers the cavalry. That was a cheap shot.
That was a cheap shot. I didn't even get to hear the rest of what she was saying.
No, me neither. We never do. She never says.
She's being all touchy feely and saying nice things. That's weird.
Trying to get in through to Daisy there. Luckily, Fitz is up to the challenge and he roasts Gear in a frying pan. I already really just shot him, but I had to get the frying pan reference in there before we didn't see Gear again.
Yeah.
So Coulson takes the Quinjet to the Zephyr to put a stop to this madness once and for all. Or does he? Misdirection. That's right. Lincoln, despite his injuries, takes the Quinjet along with the Warhead and Hive up to his oblivion, while Daisy and the rest of the team watch helplessly as the day is saved and agents fall.
Oh, but is James okay?
Oh, hey, that's a good question.
I kind of lost track of him there at the end. He got knocked out. I think they may have just captured him.
I think he's going to make it. I think he's going to pull through.
Okay. Well, our news is unfortunately really stale by this point. I'm sure you guys have all heard. I know people have been really busy on our Facebook page and our Twitter forwarding this around. But absolutely, literally, as soon as we finished recording last week, we unfortunately saw that Agent Carter was canceled.
Boo!
ABC, in their infinite wisdom, has decided that just because she is starring in another show that has been picked up for a full season, that Hayley Atwell can't possibly do any more Agent Carter, so they have said no to a third season. And fans have responded in kind. There is a petition that we were forwarding around that I think when I forwarded it to you, it was like at 7,000, and by the time you found it, it was like 12,000, and I think it's on its way to 100,000 now. It's over 50,000 signatures for fans who want to get Agent Carter picked up by Netflix.
Netflix, yes.
And, there's nothing saying that Hayley can't do an Agent Carter series while she's on her hiatus. I mean, as long as I guess it doesn't interfere. But really what I think it's doing is telling Marvel and ABC just how many fans there are of this series.
Well, it was a really well-written series and very entertaining to watch and great acting, performing, humor, action. So, it really was fantastic. If it gets picked up, I think it's well-deserved. But if not, we got two really good seasons under the belt, and we can go back and watch those.
I'm completely happy with what we got. I just they left it kind of on a cliffhanger, which I hate when they do that with shows.
Yeah, me too.
The show that I really still want to know what was going to happen was Alcatraz, which was, of course, by the makers of Lost. And so it ended on season one with this amazing cliffhanger, and then they said, this is not getting any ratings, so they were canceling that right away. I don't know. I like just getting this different, style of storytelling. It's a longer form storytelling, and it takes place, in the past. It doesn't feel like anything else that's on TV. It's very unique, and Serenity was unique too. And
yep.
It didn't even really survive even half a season there. So, it's there are quality shows that are on. And if there are shows that you guys love, you should watch those and put your support behind them, because there's so much stuff out there that's just cookie cutter. you know, from procedurals to comedies and stuff like that. And, you know, I enjoy some of those things as well. You know, there's sometimes you just want to go watch a show just because it's okay, right? It's, I don't want to really have to think too much. But Agent Carter, I mean, I felt we had to work really hard on that to kind of just keep track of what was going on and, you know, try to figure out where they were going with stuff before they did, you know, and that was kind of the fun of it too. So,
and by the end, all those pieces tied together in a really interesting way. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like period pieces like that. And one of the reasons why, Captain America First Avenger is one of my favorite, Marvel movies is just because it's so different than the others. And it takes place, in a time that the others don't.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons I like that so much. But we'll kind of see what happens. And in any way, I would love to see Hayley Atwell come back as Agent Carter in some way, because even in the Marvel universe, we're missing out on her now.
I think it would be cool if they would do some kind of flashback in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I think they're really kind of beyond. Given the season finale, I think they are probably beyond being able to do anything like that. But my favorite tweet about all of this was the fact that she got canceled pretty much, about a week or just a little less after Captain America Civil War opened, which,
yeah.
as not a huge spoiler for the film if you guys haven't seen it, but there is the funeral for Peggy Carter in that. And somebody tweeted, it's like, not fair that Peggy Carter had to die twice in 1 week.
Yeah.
So.
I agree.
Also, we found out that ABC has passed on picking up Marvel's Most Wanted, which was the Bobby and Hunter series. Again, not completely unexpected. That seemed like kind of a long shot because it had been not happening, and then it was happening, and now it's not happening again. I would really enjoy seeing Bobby and Hunter come back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in some capacity. Who knows? Maybe they could even take the characters, because Oded Fehr, I want to see more stuff with him.
They've got to bring him back now, because I mean they left with such finality that I'm really disappointed that they didn't even try this series. And again, I'm with you. I'm entirely surprised. Just it seemed like kind of a unusual thing and a long shot to begin with. Yeah. Just thinking, you know, being successful with as much as on right now and spinning off a show that is doing fine and we like it a lot, you know, but I don't know.
Right, but
how successful it's been to have a spinoff. But.
Right, but their choice to make a show is not like, oh, you know, you took these characters and you spun them off so successfully with such finality. Oh, yeah, you've kind of forced our hand. We kind of do need to make the series now, you know, of course.
That, well, yeah, I don't think it's going that way. But I think that that's the finality of the characters on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think, is what kind of surprised me. But you know what? They're not dead, so they can come back. They can work it out. Figure out a way to get them back in.
According to someone at, I think, Marvel Television, there is still stuff that they are doing, you know, with their TV shows. Because right now, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is it. There's been rumors of a half-hour sitcom-style show called Damage Control, which there's a show on NBC based on DC characters called Powerless that's coming on next season. So maybe ABC is kind of waiting to see how that fares. And if that looks like it gets the eyeballs, then maybe they're going to release their show.
So they got things on the shelf.
That's on the shelf. And Cloak and Dagger are coming to ABC Family or whatever that channel is called now. The two mutants, the light and the dark mutant, light power and the dark power mutants are having Cloak a show.
So not the Dabney Coleman.
Not the Dabney Coleman, Elliot from E.T. no, not that one.
I like that movie. That's good.
So, but, you know, they said they've got other stuff that they're thinking about, but there's been no definitive plans. And, of course, then all the Netflix shows, we've got Luke Cage to look forward to coming in September of this year. We've got Iron Fist, which is filming right now, so probably a February or March release of next year. And then they're going to follow that up with the Defenders miniseries and a Jessica Jones season two, which are supposedly going to shoot kind of back to back. And then the Punisher series that they announced. So still a lot of like TV properties for Marvel, but you know, we're still a ways off. And of course, you know, plenty of motion pictures coming, three, I think, coming next year alone. So that's pretty cool. So we'll be busy. But one other note about S.H.I.E.L.D., though, it is continuing to its fourth season. Unfortunately, it is moving into a new time slot, which is right now it airs at 9 o'clock at Eastern and Pacific. It is moving 1 hour later, and it will be airing from 10 to 11. From what people who pay attention to this stuff say, that has been a death slot on ABC, the 10 to 11 slot, and maybe specifically on Tuesday, the shows that have been there for the last couple of years are not there anymore.
Well,
so it's a balance of they're moving it later so they can do a little more edgy stuff, which, okay, that's cool. But we got to keep the ratings there. So make sure
maybe a show that's, you know, been around for 3 years now and developed an audience and shown some success, in my opinion, on its own strength. You know, not by anything that the network has done, but by the writing.
Yeah.
Maybe that will boost that up and help out a little bit. Doesn't affect my viewing habits because right. I can't watch it live anyway. But right.
Well, it's got, you know, it depends on also, I guess, how they take whatever they call DVR ratings into effect mm-hmm. or into account and stuff like that. So,
right.
But, you know, I'm concerned. Now, I would say I'm very happy with the three seasons we've got. And so right now, to me, any more that we get, like the show has done everything, I think, everything except for one thing that I've wanted to see on a S.H.I.E.L.D. show, like from when we started talking about S.H.I.E.L.D.
right,
3.5 years ago. There's one thing that they haven't done. And we'll talk about it at the end of the episode.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yep. So you know, if it were only to go four seasons, I think I would be completely satisfied because it's been quality. And it just seems to keep getting better and better. So let's talk about how better and better it's gotten here.
All right.
A big point of our discussion last week, as you recall, was going back to our final bets about who's going to die. So we finally know who that was. And of course, it's no surprise. It's Lincoln. I'm surprised they didn't actually shoot him in the head in, you know, when he was sitting in the pilot seat or something like that. I was waiting for like a gunshot to go off as well, you know, to
yeah.
play just to play on the Lincoln assassination kind of thing. But, you know, obviously he was already, dying at that point. So I guess they didn't want to, you know, do that. But, Lincoln came to some serious realizations in this episode. There was much growth with him, or maybe not even growth. Realization is the word I was going to say. You know, he faced up to his destiny, or, you know, what really was going on with him.
Are you talking about the all Inhumans have a purpose kind of thing?
Well, part of that, but also he'd been pining for Daisy, right? And so he right. kind of realized at this point that, you know, even if she would take him back, it's not, you know, she's already really made it clear that they shouldn't be together. But, you know, he kind of holds out hope. At the end, I don't know. I just felt he'd been wanting to get into S.H.I.E.L.D. for a long time. And, you know, Coulson had really been kind of a hard ass to him about the whole thing. And so then Coulson says, you know, I believe I told you that, you know, I was the one who could decide you could join S.H.I.E.L.D. and I think you'd make a great agent. And, you know, after wanting this for so long, he's kind of like, you know what, I actually reevaluating my priorities, that's really not important to me anymore. And he was going to go off and wander the world like Kane from Kung Fu.
Yeah. No, I agree. He was maybe more interesting of a character in this one episode than all of the other ones that he's been in since last season.
If they had written him this well, they wouldn't have had to kill him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have to say, I was a little not concerned, but not worried if they'd killed Lincoln off, you know, because he, number one, he hasn't been around forever. He wasn't one of the original agents. You know, he came around last season when Daisy met him.
Yep.
You know, he hadn't been a super important character as far as the team goes. They've used him really well as far as the stories this season. So I was like, you know, I guess it's not going to be that emotional. They make this big deal out of it. And then the scene came, and then the last scene came, and it was really emotional. It packed a punch. And I felt for him, and I felt for the team, and I felt for Daisy. And so I thought it was a good choice, and I thought it played out really well. And it wasn't Mac, so it's all good.
Just jumping back for one second before we get to talking a little bit more about that final scene. There was a scene earlier on in the episode, in the first episode. We're going to be talking about Absolution and Ascension kind of interdependent of each other, just because the storyline flows through both. But Lincoln was trying to put a positive spin on stuff. You know, he's like, oh, you know, Andrew died for a reason, and Daisy, you know, it's good she's back and all this stuff. And May was just being her, what appears to be, you know, usual crabby self. She was telling Lincoln to stop trying to make them feel better about what was going on. But she kind of just left it there. And I wanted to get your take on why is May being like that?
Why doesn't she want to put a good spin on it? Yeah. I think she's still kind of in mourning. Like, have you ever, you know, something bad or sad happened and you just want to feel bad about it? You know, it's like, it's almost like you have this self-assigned mourning period where you think that it's important for you to feel bad. Maybe you feel guilty about it. And so you want to kind of pay your penance by feeling bad or sad or guilty.
I'm bad and it feels bad. Yes.
Yeah. So I almost think that she doesn't want to feel okay with Andrew yet, because it's
much like Daisy.
It hasn't been long enough.
Right. Yeah. Much like Daisy in this episode, she just wants to continue feeling bad for now. That's kind of, I think there's entirely different reasoning for that, but do you agree with that? Is that, are they similar? Are those like similar grief processes there?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So Lincoln, you know, decides to go off and sacrifice himself because he realizes what everything means, you know, now. Daisy's put it all together, and because she's told him about her her premonition, he realizes what's going on, and he knows that he can't let her do this. And, you know, he's already injured. He feels horrible, and, you know, it's kind of his last loving act, you know. I mean, basically, he's saying, I love you, as he tries to say at the end of the episode without even really having to say it. And I thought Coulson put a really interesting spin on it. I really knew what they were going to have Coulson say, you know, as they were leading up to this. But he says that Lincoln's, because Daisy says Lincoln's paying for her mistake. And he says, no, Lincoln's paying for all their mistakes. And technically, really, I think it's just Coulson and Daisy's mistake. But there's enough blame to go around to everybody. I think there were a lot of mistakes that have been made this season. And, you know, it's just, you and I talk about what it takes to be a hero. And I mean, this is grade A, hero material.
Yeah. It's what Lincoln did was for sure. And I think what we're also seeing within the rest of the team is the result of being a hero and how there's a lot of pain to being a hero, because you see a lot of failure, And also you have to make tough decisions that you feel guilty about, you know? So, and that's, I think, part of what the title is, you know, the absolution is just trying to make up for what you perceive as a failure, which is what, you know, Daisy was doing. She felt so bad about the things that she had done, I think. And part of being a hero is having to deal with that. You know, your average person isn't going to have to make these huge decisions. So they're not going to feel that grief and that pain.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you don't usually have these life or death kind of decisions that you have to make, you know, unless you're in a job that requires that, you know, I'm thinking.
Right.
You know, first responders or, you know, armed forces or something like
that. Well, and again, heroes, you know, or my biggest decision of the day is usually what we're going to have for dinner. So. I don't have to go through that absolution.
I want you to make a video that shows you being a hero by deciding what you're going to have for dinner, and I want to have music, and I want to have dramatic camera angles, and
hey, I will be honest with you. My family sometimes thinks of me as a hero because I make the final decision, unless they don't like what I pick.
Are you like the tiebreaker? There,
yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, nobody. It's not so much a tie as what do you want for dinner? I don't know.
Oh, I hate that. That's the worst.
I do too. Yeah.
We have a lot of I don't know for dinner all the time.
All right, so we're having this. Oh, really? The what? Okay. All right, back to the hero stuff.
Yeah. So tell me if you got this vibe. When we were watching the final sequence of Lincoln blasting off into space and Daisy crying and begging everybody and talking with him over the phone or over the comm. Did that remind you of any other Marvel scene that you've seen in anything before?
Yeah. Okay. with a guy piloting a plane into oblivion, but saving the world. Yeah. That's a little Captain America to me.
Yeah. Except they didn't promise that they would have a dance, but you know, I mean, even up to the part where they're in the middle of a sentence and the radio just cuts out.
Yeah.
It was, oh my God. It was still Captain America, the first Avenger there.
It was, but it worked really well.
Oh, it was the best note for this episode. And you know, sometimes you see those and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe they're ripping us off. But they're ripping themselves off, basically. And the emotion was there, right? So that's what it comes down to. Is it like, you know, do we care about these characters? It's like, damn straight we care about these characters. This is heartbreaking.
Well, and I don't even feel as if it was any kind of an homage to that. I think it was just the situation. I don't think they did it purposefully to reflect Captain America or anything. Do you? Oh,
I do. I feel that, you know, given the fact that it is a Marvel film, that there was probably discussion about it. Should we do, you know, you're right. It's a situational thing. So they're like, okay, so how do we do this? Well, obviously we can't have the two characters talking, so they have to be over the radio. Okay, well, hey, if we're doing it on the radio, why don't we do it like a little bit like Captain America? And I'm sure there was discussion. Should we do that? Should we not do that? So I absolutely feel that there was, I absolutionally feel that there was a connection there.
Okay. Well, I mean, there could have been. And like you said, it was so similar that they probably talked about it. But I still feel like as if almost they were just doing their own thing. But that's the way it kind of worked out because it had to. But,
well, they both saw Captain America, the first Avenger. I mean, that's why.
Is that why?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lincoln was like, oh, you know what? I'm going to make her think of that date that we had.
And the line that he had, saving the girl I love and the world at the same time, feels pretty right to me. I mean, it encapsulates so many things. He's cocky. You know, it's kind of the cocky Lincoln as well as, you know, pointing out that, oh my gosh, I've just said I loved you, but I didn't even really realize it until a couple of moments later. And then I try to say it again. And of course, then that's the last thing he says. So, it was a character, like you said earlier, that, you know, wasn't a super main character, hadn't been around for a while. I felt it was the right character to do for this episode. And, you know, it provided the right emotional punch because of the relationship to Daisy there. So how did we do on our predictions from last week?
Well, not too bad, actually. I was pretty close as far as the plot line.
I was shocked by that. Not that you could come up with that, but like how close
you got. I was about to hang up on you.
Like I said last week, I hadn't even really thought about some of those aspects. And you were laying stuff out, and I'm like, well, yeah, that totally makes sense. And that's, you know, I would say like you were, I'm going to go like 85, 90%. I re-listened today to the segment from last week, and yeah, you were good.
Well, just, you know, I mean, it made sense with what our heroes would do, you know, that's all. Mm-hmm. But I got the wrong agent, but I blame the writers on that because they totally just, you know, gave us this gigantic piece of evidence that was wrong. So what'd you call red herring, right? Isn't that what you called it?
Yes, yeah, red herring.
Yeah, so obviously they were trying to make us think that. And I said that there's a strong possibility that it wouldn't be Mac. Yeah. But
you gave a compelling argument for it, why it could be.
Sure.
But you were close on the plot line, and I had the character and like motivation for it. And I almost had like the why would he have the cross then? Except what I didn't think was going to happen was this: the cross was going to be like the freaking hot potato in this episode. as I'm watching it, I'm like,
it's not a rabbit's foot.
Yeah. Oh my gosh! Wait, who's got the cross now? Oh no, they've what? Oh no! Come on, guys! Everybody touched the cross, and then there are people putting on shield jackets, taking off shield jackets, giving somebody else a shield jacket. I'm like, oh, for Pete's sake, you guys are killing me.
So, they're going to hand it to you next. You're like, no.
Hot potato.
Yeah. Like, so, totally wrong agent for me. But they, you know, they and also we talked about whether the plane itself was going to be where that individual died, you know, as the right. As the agent that was fallen in, and they did. I mean, it ended up being on the plane, but they made us think two people were going to die before the jet. Yeah. You know, Yo-Yo, because she got shot.
Oh
and
my
then,
gosh, that I went. Oh, wait. She doesn't have the cross. She's not wearing a jacket. There's no Quinjet. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, and then Lincoln, you know, gets hit by Hellfire there. And right. I thought maybe that was it, you know, and that's not on the jet either. It ended up being Lincoln, but
yeah.
So they gave us a lot of those opportunities to. Well,
and you thought it could have been Mac because like you thought he was getting shot for a second.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oof. Man, yeah, it was good. I really like the way they used that cross in the storyline to keep you guessing all the way through the end, all the way through the two episodes.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I thought was just really clever about the writing on this is that they were able to they've telegraphed who you thought the death was going to be. So like, right, we had enough information last week that we were able to figure it out. But then they make you start second guessing yourself all the way through the episode.
And, which is just fine with me.
Yeah, it was a great way to do it. It's like, all right, we know there's going to be a death, and they didn't just go right up to the death and let it happen. And of course, they made it last until the end of the episode. Like you said earlier, they caught Hive in like the first 30 minutes of the episode or something like that, which you were kind of like, that seems kind of weird. So how's this all going to play? Because it changes your perceptions. You think that, you know, shows like this, it's like you can't catch the bad guy early on, and it's like, oh, but we did. So maybe they're doing, you know, maybe this is the end of the episode and they're going to do something else with it. Obviously, like you said, he got free, but they played against so many types and expectations of the audience. Just very, very, very smart writing. I can't now, say enough about that.
I do have one question, though, about the writing. And again, I can look passes, but
yeah,
okay, they made a big deal about the visions that they saw. Yeah. and this particular vision, you know, that Daisy saw. So yeah. I do not see any kind of explanation as why it was Daisy seeing this vision. If she was not the one that died, There did not appear to be any kind of monitor
right.
that they were watching
right.
as a matter of fact, they even said it got cut off.
Right.
She was not on the Quinjet when any of this happened. So what's going on? Why did she see that?
I don't have a great explanation for this. Though, if we look at the vision, if the camera is the person having the vision, it is pulling back next to the arm, what would be next to Lincoln's left arm. So basically, it's pulling back between Hive and Lincoln. We just don't know Hive is over on the left side of screen, but we see the patch on the right side of screen, which is Lincoln. So it's not even from Lincoln's POV either, right?
Uh-huh.
So this appears to be the only vision that kind of has an omniscient point of view, whereas the other visions that we saw were all based on the kind of the POV of the character, whether it was Charles or whether it was the we don't really know what the guy that worked at the restaurant saw. But we know that, you know, he knew exactly what was going to happen and when he was going to die and all that kind of stuff. And the other vision we saw with Daisy, it was pretty much from her POV. One of my thoughts was, so far, everything that was being talked about this season, and I think we've discussed this, is about fate. That the Inhumans that are there are put there for a reason. People thought Lash was there to kill Hive, but Lash was there to save and make Daisy immune. Hive was there, to try to take over the world or to form a connection, really, is what he said he wanted to do. Lincoln was there to stop Hive, right? So all these things were predestined. Daisy saw all the visions we saw came to pass as we saw them. And even this last vision came to pass as we had seen it in the vision. We just misunderstood what was going on. But I'm wondering if among the powers that Lincoln had, because Daisy was really going ahead with it. I mean, she was set to be that person. She was wearing the jacket. She had the cross. She was bleeding. Had some blood on her head and stuff like that. So there was a good possibility it could have been her. And I'm just wondering if Lincoln's power was also the ability that he was able to break out of his destiny. Maybe it was Daisy's destiny to kill Hive and take him on the plane. But Lincoln took that over. And I think that what the writers were saying to us at the end there is that there is still, even in something that appears to be 99% destined, or predestined, that there's still an ability for free will to take place.
Hmm. Okay, I'll buy that. And that certainly sounds more heroic than the one I thought of. And it makes sense, too. I like that explanation. The only thing I could think of is, well, okay, we saw Lincoln's shoulder because he had the shield patch.
Yeah.
And the necklace and all that. We didn't see Hive. Maybe she was seeing it from Hive's point of view because she had a connection with him.
Wow. Actually, that is amazing. That's really good. I hadn't even considered that, but you're right. At the time she saw that, did she have the connection? Well, she would have had the connection with him. So let's see.
Had she already been infected at that point?
Yeah, when she went up to the roof. She was swayed by the time she went up to the roof, and that's when she had that last vision, I think.
Well, so maybe that was it. Maybe that was it. And we may never get an explanation for it because it was just, for the plot. But
I'm going to tweet the writers, see if we can find out.
All right, go for it. Let's see if we can get an answer. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
So. Make a note because for whatever reason, I don't have any of my writing instruments here.
Okay.
I only have this electronic computer in front of me.
Tweet writers. I'll use my red pen.
Okay. So as I mentioned, Hives started talking about how really he just wanted to make a connection. And I think that more or less showed up after he kind of got his brain fried. But even when he started to regain his composure in the second episode, and by the way, that – we kind of got Grant Ward's greatest hits laid out in front of us in about a 2-minute period there. I thought that was a really great scene for them to give Brett in, you know, what's most likely his final scenes in the show here. We can talk about
that later. Yeah. I mean, hey, they made a week into Bernie's too, so you never know. They might be able to figure out a way to do it, but
really, you're comparing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to Weekend at Bernie's 2.
No, no, just, you know, the fact that you're they were saying. Using his corpse. They were using Grant Ward's corpse. Maybe that's what they'll do. They'll just use him to have a party.
Well, there is no, I mean, there's no corpse. There was this, I will say, if I had any problems with this episode, it was the very anticlimactic of the explosion of the Quinjet in space as seen from a monitor. And it, you know, I mean, it was like half an inch tall on my screen and I got a pretty big screen. It was just this little, so I felt that was a little lackluster, but anyway. So Hive wants to make this connection. But what I wanted to ask you was, is it really Hive wanting to make the connection? Is it like Grant Ward that was talking about making a connection? What say you?
Boy, that is a great question. I mean, initially when I was watching, I just went with Hive. That was just my gut reaction, you know, Hive. But
yeah,
Grant Ward making the connection makes a lot of sense too.
Because I mean, that was, if we look back at the Ward character, he was, you know, he was always looking for someone to be with. Like, you know, he kind of glommed onto his younger brother, and, you know, then he was kind of lost and alone, and John Garrett, you know, took him under his wing, and so he was really happy to do that. And then he kind of, you know, came and became friends with May and Daisy and stuff like that. So there's, you know, there was a lot of, I felt that just, you know, the reason we got those Grant Ward static scenes and stuff that we got, that there were other reasons why he was talking about connections and stuff like that.
Yeah, that makes sense too. Like I said, I didn't think about it at the time, but that fits pretty well.
And there was, so there was callback to a lot of dialogue and other scenes. We saw, Grant and his brother, I think it was from the well episode back in the first season, where they were talking about, like friends till the end or, you know, staying together till the end or something along those lines. And there was another great tie-in. This is why I say that this season finale also is a great, closure piece for the entire three seasons, because they went back, Josh, to episode 2. And pulled a piece of dialogue that was an interesting piece of dialogue for then. And I in no way can believe that they wrote that at the time and said, we're going to use this in, you know, in like three seasons when we turn Grant Ward into some kind of monster. But he kept saying, pieces solving a puzzle, pieces solving a puzzle. And I was like, that is so familiar. I really remember that scene, but I couldn't remember what the episode was. So I did a little investigation. I love the internet. Can I just say that when you can just type pieces solving a puzzle and the number one hit is the episode, season one, episode 2, 084 episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That is amazing.
That is amazing.
But it was Sky's line to Grant. And again, we're talking about the second episode of the series. We're, you know, brand new characters, two characters that have never existed before, Sky and Ward. And she says, usually one person doesn't solve the solution, but 100 people with 1% of the solution. That will get it done. I think that's beautiful. Pieces solving a puzzle. And Grant says, you and I see the world differently. Oh my gosh. Thematically, that tells us volumes about where these characters have come, and it is so apropos to the conditions that these characters are in at the end of the third season. the same two characters. They both see the world differently, though in some fashion they've even kind of reversed their positions. But he is pieces solving a puzzle. I mean, he's made up of millions of little parasite things, right? He says that the bones aren't even holding him up. It's all the, you know, the whatever, whatever.
The individual objects.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also of the inhumans that he's controlling, you know, I consider kind of part of that entity as well.
Yeah, of course. And, you know? And the ones that he's taken over, all the memories of the ones that he's got inside of him as well.
Right. Right. I mean, and he wants to make the planet inhuman. And so I think that would give him more pieces in the puzzle. So just
amazing.
Yeah, that is. That's incredible. I would not have ever thought of looking back
at an episode of Earth last week, let alone being able to realize what I wrote like 3 years ago to be able to pull something like that together. I thought that was just really, really interesting. So Daisy goes through withdrawal in this episode. I thought it was I had a little difficulty tracking Lincoln. In there was one sequence where he's saying, "I know why you went back," and she's like, "No, no, no," and trying to explain. He's like, "No, I know you did go back, and I know why." And I'm like, "Wait a second, what do we know about Lincoln?" But he had a drinking problem, if I believe right, and he had a car crash and nearly killed his fiance. I think was the story that James had told.
Uh huh. Or I think Lincoln told Daisy, but James was
pulling it out of him,
calling him out on it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But so you know, and they likened Coulson and Daisy, I think at one point likened it to, you know, dope addiction. So that she was coming out from under the sway, what, like cold turkey? What's it called when you've been drinking a lot and then you stop? You get the DTs.
Oh yeah.
So that was really interesting, but, there was one kind of aspect of Daisy's story that I've watched it like three times now. It's just this one sequence, just because I was trying to get a handle on it. And that's like, I figure, okay, well, I watch the episodes again, and then I'll go back and watch the very first shot in the very first episode, which is where Daisy's having we don't know it's a dream at the moment. I thought it was like a flash forward, but Daisy and Coulson are in the
containment unit.
Yeah. Right? And they're on Mav-Eth, and she's trying to get the wiring to work, and Coulson's obviously having some difficulty breathing or whatever, and she says, you know, I didn't realize, you know, I knew someone was going to die. I didn't realize it was going to be everyone. And then he says, this isn't, you know, we don't have to get back to Earth. We're on Earth. And then she wakes up. What? I mean, I feel like I should be reading a lot more into this, but do you have any insight on that sequence, or what did that mean to you?
No, like you, I thought it was a flash forward. I thought that's where they were going to end up or something.
Yeah. Felt that was a cliffhanger.
And if it was just her dream, it seemed odd that they just did it that once. They never called back to it. She never had another dream that we saw.
She didn't mention it to anybody.
No, and it seemed as if she was sort of predicting that, you know, Hive was going to win, and this is what was going to be left after he won. And
right, he was going to kill everybody off, and then they were going to be stuck on this barren planet, basically.
Yeah, so it was like playing off of the fears that she had, but I'm not sure really how that one part connected with the rest of the story. It didn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, I mean, it fit within her fears and what she was worried about. But and I think the Mav-Eth part of it was connected to her connection with Hive. You know what I mean? It had something to do with her connection with Hive, because even though I originally not from Mav-Eth, but
yeah, spent a lot of time there, obviously.
Right, right. So that to me was like based on that connection with Hive. But
do you think she still has some of that he took a lot of information from her, even though there's no connection between them in this episode. He still knew all this stuff about her. Do you think she that was saying that she still retains some of Hive in her?
It almost did. It almost seemed like the connection went both ways. You know, she wasn't controlling him, but she was getting parts of him. I don't think she had memories, but maybe just feelings, emotions, or something. You know?
Yeah. It's I don't know. I feel it was just a one-off kind of thing that never got called back. So I'm not sure how it's supposed to go in there, but maybe it's just, you know, maybe it was supposed to be a little misdirection and also just kind of give us a little insight into what she's thinking about. And maybe it's her punishing herself. She was racked with crippling guilt about being brainwashed. I'm not surprised by it because, I mean, that's like serious depression level stuff that she gets into. I mean, just kind of saying, I just need to wake up every day with, you know, these same, you know, feelings right on the surface just to punish myself. It's like, all right, nobody really needs to go through that. She even wanted to get the brain picker machine out of mothballs and subject yourself to that. Here's another thing they did drop. Coulson says, we did get the brain picker machine out, but it's not for you. But then they never mentioned anything else about that. I'm not sure who they thought it might be for. So that was, I'm just realizing that now. They mentioned that and then nothing happened with it.
Yeah, I almost, at one point I thought it might be for Coulson, but I don't know what purpose that would have served.
Yeah, I don't know. I did like when she likened herself to Ward and his time with Hydra. You know, I think it was May or no, maybe it was Simmons. She was saying that, you know, it's okay, you were brainwashed, and she's like, yeah, but so was Ward, and you know, look what he did. And it's like these two characters who have been so closely intertwined over the show, first as like, you know, SO and rookie, and then sort of as equals and partners and lovers, or I can't remember how far they went with that. But, you know, then to having this rift torn between him and him having a kind of a pining for her, and now this weird bastardization of the whole relationship with this thing that took over his memories. Very, very interesting arc. Again, a 3-season arc for that.
Hive needs some serious therapy, man. He's got to get in touch with his issues.
Not anymore. So here's we might say that the earlier part where we're talking about Captain America, the First Avenger, you know, that's just a coincidence about that. I feel, however, this next part is probably not a coincidence, though. Again, it could be. But the reason I say this is that the creators of this show were the ones that created Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Because I thought that Daisy's wanting or needing to get back to Hive and just her almost level of panic in needing to get back to that addiction was very, very similar thematically to the way Buffy Summers was when she died and was brought back to life by her gang, which was the end of, by the way, spoiler for like a 12-year-old series. this was be the end of season 5 of Buffy and the beginning of season 6, the gift and bargaining. And basically she died and they were going to end it. But then I think that's when UPN or somebody else picked up the show and it moved networks. And her friends brought her back, like they pulled her back out of the wormhole or whatever it is she fell into. And she basically had died and wanted to, was so upset with them for like 2 episodes because, you know, they were like, oh, we rescued you. And she's like, I was in the most peaceful, beautiful place ever. And everything was perfect. It was like heaven. And then you just ripped me out of it. And so she has this, you know, she's kind of having this psychosis about it. And, you know, I get, you know, again, that could have also been a metaphor for addiction, in the way that they likened it here in this episode. But again, Whedon produced shows, it was very similar seeming to me.
I would believe that. I mean, at the very least, a theme, you know, that they're going for.
Yeah. Yeah. And the, you know, this show is very strong on picking, kind of universal themes, that it can have different takes on, I guess. Let's see. Let's talk a little bit about Mac. I thought he had some really heavy responsibility in this episode. When we were talking about whether Mac was going to die last week, I was saying that if he did die, then Daisy and he wouldn't get to have kind of their conversation about, you know, him blaming her or her having guilt about almost killing him under Hive's sway. And you said you thought that was going to happen before anyone would die anyway, and you were correct. He kind of went in and, you know, protocols be damned, he went right into her room and, you know, without any prompting, he just told her that he was sorry and that, you know, he forgives her, which I thought was really interesting because, you know, that episode that he did that in was called Absolution, which is the definition of that is formal release from guilt, obligation, or punishment. And he was kind of the de facto priest for the episode.
Oh, yeah, I agree completely. Yeah, I mean, they've set him up to kind of be like that almost. It's an interesting character, and it's not what you would expect a guy that looks like Mac to act. I mean, he's not really the action star of the show, you know. He's a deeply religious guy. He uses that a lot in his dealings with other characters, and they really put all that setup that they've done in the second half of the season with Mac, that setup of that character, they put it to good use this time around.
What else did you see that Mac was up to in this episode? You know, he's, like I said earlier, he's obviously a fan favorite. What kind of things were you looking to get out of him, or what else did you see that Mac was doing that you thought was good usefulness in this episode?
Well, I was thinking about this actually just on my way home here to talk to you tonight, and how if they had killed Mac, it would have been. I really like Mac, and I know that he's a fan favorite, and I started thinking about why, because he hasn't done tremendous amounts of plot development in the series at all, but he's a likable guy. You know that he's a good, kind person, you know, just because of how he acts and the things that he does and the heroic acts. He's been willing to walk away from S.H.I.E.L.D. I think several times since they've introduced the character, because he has his own kind of set of values that don't always gel with what S.H.I.E.L.D. stands for, or at least what the decisions Coulson makes. And so I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe there's really not as much to this character as everybody is kind of going off on, because they like him so much. And but I think in this particular episode, they used him with, like you said, with Daisy. They also had a really interesting scene, I thought, with Yo-Yo. He's really has this relationship with Yo-Yo that I think it could be kind of a cool little partnership there, depending on where they go with it. But where she was, you know, she gave him the cross.
Yeah.
And that's a huge thing for her. I mean, that's a gigantic thing for her. I mean, that's almost like she's saying, look, you and I have this connection, you know, not a marriage or a dating thing, but I mean, almost deeper than that, you know, spiritual.
Oh, yeah.
And
simpatico.
And then he tries to give it back to her. He's like, oh, you better take this. You know, she's like, hey, it's not a rabbit's foot. Okay. It's not a lucky thing. I gave this to you. So he's still kind of finding where his spirituality has a place in this particular life that he's chosen, you know? So then I got to thinking, well, maybe, you know, maybe they should keep him around and continue on this path, because it's a, I think I've said this before, he's a much different character than you're used to seeing on shows like this.
Yeah. Well, let me look at it this way, that you got me thinking about, you know, like you said, he's not really the action star of the show. You've got Coulson and May, who kind of act as surrogate parents on the show, right? So kind of like a father and a mother. May really is the action star for the show. Fitz and Simmons are the brains.
The brains, right.
Daisy is the heart. And so I'm thinking Mac really is the conscience of the team.
Oh, yes. That totally fits.
He's the one there that, because of his faith, he is the one that's arguing the morality of their actions and, you know, just trying to keep – basically, he's trying to offer salvation to them so that, you know, whether – I guess they believe if whether they believe they're, you know, going to go to hell or not, he probably, you know, wants to save them, not in a radical religious way, but, you know, looking out for them as friends, like as you would do, but not in, you know, like a, hey, excuse me, may we talk to you about the, you know, the Church of whatever, the Poison Mind or whatever.
Church of Religious Consciousness? Or was
yes,
that?
yeah. there was one other thing that, oh yeah. So, Mac also was, he was really anxious about having to hold the team's kill switches, which boy, that's gotta be a ton of pressure on him. But then he's working really slowly putting everything together. And I felt it was, Fitz pointed out that, no, Mac knew exactly what he was doing, and Yo-Yo was like, you know, you're going slow, and then you take a break, and then you keep going slow. And she's like, you need to hurry up. And he's like, you know, I just don't want to do this wrong. And I almost felt like he was purposefully trying to not finish because – and then I don't know why.
Really? See, I was thinking it was more he was unsure of himself, and Yo-Yo was helping give that confidence back. That's what how she was kind of serving.
Oh, okay. Him. I can see that. That's.
I think since he had lost Daisy, he's been very unsure of himself. And then even when he went back to get her and he failed and she beat him up, it seemed like he doesn't have that confidence that he once had.
Yeah. Okay. No, I can totally buy that. That's good. And I mean, and I love the relationship that he and Yo-Yo have set up because, again, it's a different everybody has different relationships with the other characters. So they don't have two characters having the same relationship with a single character. So like Fitz and Mac don't have the same relationship with Daisy. Two separate relationships. And I think that's important, and it allows them to come up with, you know, entirely radical, different thoughts from the characters and stuff like that. It's not it. You know, there's so many times that you watch a movie or you read a book or you watch a TV show and you go, all right, all these characters were written by the same person, and I can tell because they all have certain, they all behave in the exact same way under certain circumstances, which is, you know, given the fact that one person is writing him, it's not a huge surprise, but that is probably one of the hardest things to do with characters, I think, is to give everybody their own unique voice and their own unique style. And of course, in a movie or a TV show, it's a little bit easier because you have different actors that are portraying them. But a lot of times it's the you know, the way the words are written, feel the same. You know, you could take a speech and it would be very difficult for you to figure out who said this because everybody kind of on the page sounds alike. But I feel these characters, everybody has their own voice, and there's a definite way that they talk and that they interact with the other, you know, each character and stuff that makes it all unique. So,
you know what, that's why we have these rich conversations and are able to talk about where we think they're going to go and how they think they're going to interact with each other. So,
yeah.
Good, you know, kudos on the writing team there.
So I want to talk a little bit about some of the tech that we saw, some of the new tech that we saw. We got to see Coulson's new upgrade to his arm, which was cool. We've already seen I looked at it. It was like it said like Quinjet, comms, and defense. And I think we've already seen the defense button, which was the shield that came out the other week.
I think some stuff that was under his sleeve was like also Facebook and Angry Birds, I think, were both on there.
That was, I also thought it was funny that he said that he had something else up his sleeve. You know, he literally pulls up his sleeve and, you know, we've got, so we had the return of the holographic projector, which was very cool. I did not see that coming, but of course, to have Coulson have to do a little Star Wars reference with it, I thought brilliant. And of course, it cut off in the exact right spot of his speech, where he says, "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only." And then it cuts off, right? Because that's how they did it in the original movie.
I couldn't believe they went that blatant. I thought that was awesome.
it was really fun. Fitz surprised the heck out of me. Where did this invisible gun come from? Oh my gosh. That was awesome.
Yeah, look at that. that's new. You gotta. That was awesome. I don't know how to say anything else to say about that because we don't know anything about. I don't remember them working on it before or talking about it. I could be missing something, but
no.
I just like that he pulled it out. Oh, Gear! Guess what I got?
You'll never see it coming. You'll never see it. I'm totally. Are you not getting this? Sorry. Bang, bang, bang. Okay. See, I told you. I just thought I was really scared from him. Like, oh my gosh, how is he going to get out of this? Cause he is, he literally was freaked out, but.
You know, can I mention also real quick, the way that they did the attack on May from Guerra, I didn't know what had happened to her either. So that could have been another agent that we might have thought had died. Cause I really did think he shot her.
Oh yeah, I couldn't really tell. I saw there was like a I don't know some you know
he threw something at her, right?
Yeah, he threw like a fire extinguisher or something at her, but it wasn't a fire extinguisher. But yeah, very similar. And then what I believe is a culmination of almost 2 years. Since the initial reference, or maybe it was just end of last season.
It was same time last year here. It was on the season finale, the 2 hour season finale.
It was when he cut Coulson's arm off with the axe, right?
Yep.
And he talked about, So that happened with the axe, but his first reference to the shotgun axe was in the hospital at the beginning of this season when they were fighting Lash. I thought.
Oh, okay.
Like, because he said something like, "Man, I really should make that shotgun axe I've been thinking about," or something like that. And here we are. I got a beautiful screenshot I'm going to post of the shotgun axe. It looked beautiful. And then he really didn't use the shotgun part of it, nor the axe part. He just kind of started hitting people with it. But I don't know. You know, it's a 9 o'clock show.
Hey, but at least he's got it. You know, it's a start. It's an origin story. Origin story of the shotgun axe. That's what all of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is, all three seasons.
It's been leading shotgun to this, axe, right?
Yes, exactly.
And of course, you know, it means it has the ability to show up next year. I just hope they don't overuse it. I mean, like once or twice would be nice, I think.
You're good with that, huh? It's his thing, though. It's his signature.
Yeah. So the end of the episode, I was they're wrapping up, and then I think it was Simmons, you know, who says, "Okay, so what happens next?" Ba-boom! 6 months later. 6 months later? And I look down at my watch. I'm like, how much time do we have left on this show? So let's talk a little bit about what we saw here. So Coulson and Mac are working together to track somebody down, which we realize is Daisy. We saw some newspaper headlines, quake topples, bridge and earthquake brings down bank. Those were the two main ones we saw. We saw a bunch of other ones that said like, who is quake? And, you know, there's some like, it was like Bigfoot pictures. It was like these fuzzy pictures of a person. So I think that would, that's the first reference to her comic book name, Quake, that we've heard, because Mac always called her Tremors. But she's on the run for some reason. Why do you think she's on the run? Why is she bringing down bridges and banks?
Boy, I don't know. And unless Bridges and Banks is like a bad 70s duo, you know, they just sing soft rock music. But
Nash Bridges,
I don't
and
know.
Thomas Banks. I don't know. So.
My initial thought was, well, maybe it's not her. You know, maybe that people think it's her, or even Coulson maybe thinks it's her or something, and it's actually not her.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, really it seems pretty obvious, but yeah. I don't know why. I couldn't think of another reason why she would be doing that. I mean, there's got to be some motivation behind that. Why she's on the run, I don't know. I'm assuming because she left S.H.I.E.L.D. because of all of the incidents that happened and with Lincoln dying. And
yeah.
I think she probably left, and now she's looking for something or doing something.
Well, she seems to be looking out, you know, and like – there was a reference to like that she's helping people or something along those lines. Obviously, she's helping Charles's wife and daughter, the guy that had the precognition powers that we saw a few episodes ago. And she's been – maybe she's been robbing banks to get money to pay the, you know, the family to help them move and stuff. You know, so it's, she's been doing – bad things, but for good reasons.
Yeah, and I mean, when we first met Sky, she was infiltrating. You know, she was fighting with technology, right? She was using the computer. Yeah. Maybe she's taken down corrupt banks, or you know, people, rich people that are doing bad things, like old Gideon Malik was, or something. So
right. So she's been funneling this money to help the wife and the daughter move, you know, somewhere else, which is near where they put Cal. She made a reference to that she was going to introduce them to somebody else who really liked animals as well. So I thought that was cool. And she also says she's keeping a promise. And I'm wondering, I was thinking about like what promise that might be in it. And it could be, And I'd have to go back and look, but it could be a promise that she made to Charles when he was dying. I can't remember specifically.
Yeah, didn't he ask her to give his daughter the bird?
Oh,
I thought that was the promise that she made.
Maybe that's what it was. Okay. So Coulson and Mac see her, and so they chase after her with a bunch of other agents of some kind, right? They're all driving the big black SUVs, so it kind of looks like what's going on, but then they realize they've lost her, and Coulson says, well, I guess we need to call the director. Whoa, wait a second. So Coulson's not the director anymore. They may not even be working for S.H.I.E.L.D. Who is the, quote, new – I put who is the new director of S.H.I.E.L.D., but now that I'm thinking about it, it doesn't necessarily even have to be a director of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's just – who is the new director? Who is this director they're talking about?
Kevin Tancher-Owen.
Yeah.
No,
he was
no,
the director of that episode, but
oh yeah, now they're calling a new director. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it could be ATCU. Maybe they've combined, but it did seem like he was no longer the director. It seemed like he was talking about the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., and that's not Coulson's position anymore.
Right. If it's ATCU, I would say it's probably Talbot. But the way they talked and calling somebody a director, I mean, that is a name that they use in S.H.I.E.L.D. So I'm kind of going back to my first idea about that. The only person that, unless it's somebody we've never heard of, the only person I'm thinking that would be capable of being the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. would be May. That's
could be.
That's I mean, she was in that entire flash forward sequence, she's the only one that we did not see or hear about. We saw Daisy, we saw Coulson, we saw Mac, and we heard about Fitz and Simmons.
Oh, you know what? I didn't think about her being the only one. That would make sense.
So
we got any Marvel movies between now and 6 months from now that might give us some indication of a new director of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
No, Director Strange. Doctor Strange is coming, but that's not until November. So that'll be, a month and a half after the season starts.
All right. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait.
Then we cut over to Holden Caulfield. No, Holden.
Radcliffe.
Holden Caulfield. He's cursing a storm, I guess. Who is trying to get to see if Fitz? He really likes Fitz and Simmons, but I think he's really made more of a connection to Fitz because Fitz is the technologist. He really, really liked Fitz's work on the hand. He thought that was cool, and I think that sparked a little something in him. So he's talking to Ada, his AI computer counterpart, and he then starts uploading some files, and on the screen we see three little letters, Josh. What three little letters have we've been waiting for since season one?
I heart you. No.
No.
WT. No, I know what it is. LMDs.
LMDs. Very good. Life model decoys. And he says that it's Ada's birthday, and there's a silhouetted shape inside this case, and I'm assuming he will be uploading her AI into a body. So I'm guessing we get a new regular on the show next season.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, could you tell? Was it a man or a woman?
It appeared to be a female shape.
It did. Okay.
And since Ada was a female, voice, I'm assuming it's going to be a woman.
Well, that's what I assumed too. And then I remembered that there is a possibility that they could bring Grant Ward back somehow.
So they're going to do an LMD of Grant Ward. How screwed up would that be?
That would be pretty screwed up.
But he did say many of their friends had died, so that it did imply, there was implication in Holden's speech that they could bring back anybody that is no longer on the show that has died, I guess. So like BJ Britt could come back as Agent Dead Too Soon. But why do I always triplet?
Yes.
Triplet could come back.
Agent Dead Too Soon. They could bring him back too, though.
Yeah.
Is that like Agent Beardface? Is that?
And of course, they could bring back one of the Koenig brothers, who now I kind of have to assume they probably really were triplets and not a bunch of LMDs wandering around. But
oh well, maybe one of them is a new director of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That could be too. I doubt that. I really,
no,
really
yeah.
doubt that.
They could bring back all, what's her name? Xena, Lucy Lawless.
Oh, right, right. I really got a Ex Machina vibe, you know, like Alicia Vikander as the agent. So it, you know, that would, I would not stop watching the show because of that. So,
okay, yeah.
Well, but
I can look forward to that.
Talking about Brett Dalton, though, earlier, do you feel like that he is done with the show? Is there any chance that he will continue on the series as a regular or anything else?
I sure don't feel like it. If they do decide to bring him back in some capacity, I hope it's in a way that's just not completely ridiculous. I mean, I didn't feel like this was completely ridiculous.
No.
It made it nice and creepy and entertaining. So, but to bring him back again, it would have to be something really good and really important.
Potentially flashbacks, I guess. But I don't think there's any more story to be told with him. Though I do think John Hannah may be a regular or semi-regular next season as Holden Radcliffe. It seems like he's going to be helping out. And that's perfectly fine with me too. I think, you know, obviously as we've talked about, I think he's a great actor and there's definitely room for another person on the show, you know, cause we're down to, if we've got Coulson May, Fitz and Simmons, Daisy, you know, in a entirely different capacity and Mac, you know, there's still room for, you know, another person to be on the show.
Brought an interesting sense of levity to it too.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, it says some interesting things at strange times.
And I also think it's really interesting. It seems like the way that the series is going for season four, based on this, is it's really going back to its roots, right? Daisy's kind of a loner, you know, stealing, you know, just kind of doing whatever she does, but now she's got superpowers. It seems like the Secret Warriors may have been disbanded. No mention of Joey, no Yo-Yo, and no James, you know, in the short little sequence they had. And
yeah, although I still think they're going to bring in James as a member of S.H.I.E.L.D. here.
Yeah, I hope that they still have the Secret Warriors going, but obviously with the Sokovia Accords is something that's happening in the Marvel Universe, and the registration of these characters. If Coulson's not there to protect these people under the guise of S.H.I.E.L.D., and you know, so S.H.I.E.L.D. may have been totally disbanded, but I mean, they are calling the show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. still. All right. As far as I know, they aren't changing the title of the show. So I still think it probably is S.H.I.E.L.D. in some fashion, but maybe not publicly. It may be the ATCU. The newspaper articles that we saw did mention the ATCU, so it is still around. And maybe S.H.I.E.L.D. is just kind of still an ideal, but not an organization or something like
that. Yeah. Well, and Daisy could be on the run because of the Sokovia Accords.
Yep. Yep. And then finally, did Fitz and Simmons ever go to the Seychelles? Did they get to snorkel a little bit? I don't know.
I think there was some snorkeling going on. I think they took themselves a vacation.
I think they did as well. And good for them that they've been through a lot. And I'm glad that the writers decided to give those characters a little, you know, some togetherness and not just be cruel and keep them apart for the sake of drama.
Agreed.
So
it was time.
Wow, man. That was two great hours of episodes there. A really, really enjoyable season. And I'm really looking forward to what's to come. But, you know, that is all for this season's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. case files. We will be back during the summer, as we have done before, with occasional, what do we call them? The summer specials, I guess. So we'll continue talking to you guys, but it'll be infrequently, probably about once every 5 or 6 weeks, I think. So
we'll see. We'll see what we can do. I'm sure there's some stuff that we can talk about. There'll be some news over the summer and other things that we'll be looking into. So you guys check out Facebook page for more, and also, you know, keep getting on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and see what we have, because I have had a great time this season talking to you, Jay, about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., their best season yet, I think.
Yeah, and as have I.
So, well, if you guys enjoyed this episode and this season or anything that we had to say, make sure you leave some feedback for us on iTunes. And, hey, also contact us. We'd love to hear from you. What'd you think of this finale? Email us at shield@randomchatter.com. Tweet at us at Agents Podcast, or Facebook at us, facebook.com/Agents Podcast.
And you can also check out the other podcasts that Josh and I host, including Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, all available via randomchatter.com. All these shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you're enjoying our podcast and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show, please let your friends know about us. Remind everybody that does watch it that they will be on an hour later next year. We'll remind you when our podcast comes back here during the summer. But for now, for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.